You read about 24/7. You can see him on social media at B Crawford 24/7. He's with us now on the JohnstonRVCenter.com hotline. What's up, Brad? How are you?
Hey guys, how we doing? I've seen Top Gun for a fifth time this week, so I'm flying high right now.
Oh my God. Five times in a theater. Why so many times, Brad?
Hey, my dad's military. Him and I are into fighter jets, and we were waiting, I mean, 2 or 3 years for this movie, man, and it truly delivered.
Yeah, I saw it for the first time this past Sunday night. So where do you rank it with the original?
Oh, it's much better than the original. I mean, the original is somewhat campy compared to this new one, man. It's much better planes, F-18 Super Hornet. I'm excited for part three. After making $1 billion at the box office, they got to have a third.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't know if they could stop now.
Yeah, it's going to be tough, especially with Miles Teller and the height that he's at in Hollywood right now. Have you ever flown in something similar?
I actually missed out on a chance, man. I used to write in newspapers back in 2010, 2011, and I was a sports reporter. So our business reporter and / entertainment at the time got up to, you know, go inside Blue Angels and fly at, you know, Mach 1, 800 miles an hour or so. So I regret that back from my print media days.
Is there a simulator anywhere like in Huntsville at the space agency or anything that you could get in or somewhere in NASA or something that you could get in? We can maybe we'll send Brad to camp this summer or something. Let him go fly. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I actually work for Paramount, so I've told Paramount that if we do see a Top Gun 3, like, you've got to ship me to the premiere, man. I've got to be there night one.
You mentioned Mach 1, and obviously in film, not giving anything away, you know, they hit Mach 10. Yeah, I mean, what would it take you monetarily to even approach like Mach 8?
So like Mach 10 is like 7,900 miles an hour. And I don't want to give any spoilers, but like Tom Cruise ejecting from that plane at 8,000 miles an hour. I mean, how do you survive that? You know?
Yeah, with both arms and both legs at that point, right?
It looked like he got a little scorched when he walked in the
cabin. He's thirsty.
Yeah, he needs a drink. All right, Brad. So at 24/7 Sports, you've done a lot of work. Obviously, Brad does great work almost every single day.
Sounds like he's always at the movies.
But yeah, I don't know how he does it, going to the movies all the time, but he does great work every single day. We send a lot of it out, and the morning reads that Dunaway does. I want to ask you, the transfer at Alabama, because your most explosive players, you include Jahmyr Gibbs, right? The transfer at Alabama you think will impact them the most, Jahmyr Gibbs offensively or Eli Ricks defensively?
So I'm not even sure Eli Ricks is going to start for Bama.
Whoa. You don't think he's going to start?
So, I mean, talking to a few Bama insiders that work for us, I mean, Eli was certainly in the mix this spring, but I mean, Bama does have some guys in the secondary who are already ballers. And I mean, Eli Ricks is a top rated corner transfer. Obviously he's going to play a ton of snaps, but I think we're going to see somewhat of a rotation there. So I would go with Gibbs, man. You know, I think Bama needed to bring a guy in the backfield after losing Brian Robinson, you know, Trey Sanders after, you know, some of the turmoil that he's kind of been through in Tuscaloosa. He hasn't been the explosive five-star that maybe a lot of us thought he would be coming out a couple of years ago. So, you know, Bama needs that dynamic weapon in the backfield, and, you know, the early returns are in, and Jahmyr Gibbs is going to be that guy.
You know, one of the big questions for this Alabama offense after a decade of just elite wide receivers is who is going to be that guy. Jermaine Burton comes in from Georgia. Watching him last year, he seemed good and solid, but he didn't seem like an elite Alabama wide receiver. Do you think he can take that next step?
I'm sort of with you guys on that. You know, I don't see Bryce Young, you know, having a 5,000-yard, 50-touchdown type season in his Heisman encore. You know, Jermaine Burton's obviously a good fit there. He's going to be wide receiver one, but I don't think he is the splash impact, you know, 1,400-yard guy that maybe Bama coaching staff might expect. You know, I think the kid from Louisville may have possibly better numbers if he gets a certain amount of targets. You know, he's a guy, I think Harrell averaged over 20 yards a catch last season, only had 30 receptions, but, you know, he's a field stretcher. And Harrell's a guy who's closer to a, you know, Jameson Williams type than Burton is, maybe a possession type guy.
A story that we'll have in our morning rounds tomorrow, you go back and you look at the 24/7 rankings of the best top 10 quarterbacks of all time since you guys have been ranking them. And Bryce Young's in there, but there's no Tua Tagovailoa. There's nobody else who's signed with Alabama in there. It's Bryce Young and guys like Brock Bolin, Jimmy Clausen, and, of course, Arch Manning. Is Arch Manning ever – how can he meet expectations, Brad? What does he have to do to meet these expectations that the world has laid out for him?
I mean, I think to be the top-rated quarterback of all time, you know, three guys have been in that 24/7 composite, you know, top-rated player scenario, him, Vince Young, Quinn Ewers. You have to at least win a Heisman Trophy or a national championship at Texas, right? I mean, in order to meet those, you know, lofty, really outside the stratosphere expectations. Arch is a guy, obviously comes from a good family, NFL background, has all the talent in the world. But, you know, coming in as the number one player of all time at the quarterback spot, obviously expectations are pretty wild for him. And, you know, it's going to be hard to meet that. But I'm sure Steve Sarkisian, that Texas coaching staff fellow, they're going to do all they can to make sure he has the pieces around him, you know, to get it done and get the Longhorns in that Final Four picture.
If you were Greg Sankey and controlled all scheduling, Texas' first game as a conference team, you're probably going to let them play that in Austin, but would you consider it being Ole Miss with the Manning backstory?
Either that or Texas A&M.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, I'd like to see that one too. Yeah,
I mean, you know, both of those games, the storylines would be endless. You know, it would give crazy summer fodder for fellas like us, you know, in the media business. But I'm looking forward to seeing this SEC new scheduling. You know, whether that happens in 2024, 2025, you know, we should see some really fantastic matchups week in, week out.
I have historically said that Jimbo Fisher is an overrated coach. The expectation this year is after beating Alabama last year, they can finally win the West, go to their first ever SEC championship game, possibly get to a college football playoff. What is your expectation for the Aggies this year?
So Jimbo is, you know, one of five active coaches right now with a national championship. So he does have that to his credit. You know, Jameis Winston just about won it by himself that year with Florida State. But, you know, Jimbo's reputation as a developer of a top-end quarterback, you know, he's going to have to do it again. And that's the biggest question for me right now with, you know, putting Texas A&M in the top five. I had them, I think, seven in our own rankings, you know, preseason. I think they're pretty much a unanimous top five team elsewhere. But, you know, between that, you know, three-player, I guess you can call it a competition right now between Haynes King and, you know, the freshman and everybody else in that room, I'm just not sure Texas A&M has a guy right now who can – you know, win four or five games this season against top 25 teams, which is what it's going to take to win the SEC West. So I'd probably have A&M just outside of that playoff picture. I think I had them as a New Year's Six, 10-2 type finish this fall.
We will unveil our fan vote a little bit later on, our viewers and listeners, at 11 o'clock, and we've done this many years. One of the toughest teams I had in putting my ballot in out of the SEC was South Carolina and Shane Beamer. I see the jersey behind you there. Where do you project them this year? Because it looks like to me, Brad, that Shane has done everything right in starting his time there. But how does that translate to wins and losses with the schedule that they face?
Yeah, I think the acquisition of Spencer Rattler, five-star quarterback from OU in December out of the transfer portal, was not only surprising, but, you know, if we're going with a baseball type, you know, war stat, I think he adds probably two wins to this season's schedule. Wow. I think oddsmakers right now have the Gamecocks at 5.5 wins over under. I've got them 7-5, but I do think South Carolina's closer to a 6-6 type team than an 8-4. You know, there's a ton of swing games. Week two at Arkansas is huge. You know, they open the SEC slate at home against Georgia week three. So that's possibly an 0-2 start with, you know, the football team really not being that bad based on scheduling. So Spencer Rattler has to play well. Jaheim Bell, possible first round tight end, you know, has to be a, you know, 50 catch, 900 yard, 10 touchdown type guy. But, you know, Shane Beamer has that program headed in the right direction, but I'm not sure if they're going to improve on last season's, you know, 7 win total based on that brutal schedule.
If Tennessee, South Carolina, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, and Arkansas all end up 7-5, Will any of those fan bases be happy with that? Because they all seem to have these lofty expectations, but that's a realistic number for all those teams.
Yeah, I mean, Ole Miss, it's going to be really hard to match, you know, a 10-2 regular season, first time ever in program history that the Rebels won 10 games. That's not happening again. Even if Jackson Dart, you know, or Altmyer, you know, has a fantastic season, I just don't see Ole Miss winning 10 games again. And right now, you ask anybody in Oxford, you know, 9-3, 10-2 is probably the expectation. And, you know, Lane Kiffin has brought that there. And then, you know, Arkansas is a team that, you know, probably is going to enter the AP preseason poll next month or in August inside the top 20. I think rightfully so with KJ Jefferson back, him and Hendon Hooker at Tennessee are my top two quarterbacks in the SEC behind Bryce Young. So, you know, KJ has to play well. And Drew Sanders, the five-star transfer linebacker from Alabama, I think he's going to be a first-team all-SEC guy for Arkansas and really a guy who, as far as impact transfers go, is going to really turn heads in Fayetteville.
To me, this is an easy answer. We asked this question a couple of weeks ago, though. But in their prime, Jennifer Connelly or Kelly McGillis?
No disrespect to McGillis, but Jennifer Connelly for sure. Yeah. I mean, she's 50 years old, and she looked 25 in Top Gun Maverick.
She did. Ridiculous,
yeah, it really was.
We agree with you.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there.
I think 25 is a little bit of an old miss.
no, a good
misleading
strong,
expectation
she's a good
there.
Strong 40.
But yeah. She looked beautiful. Yes, she did. Yes.
Go follow Brad on Twitter at @BCrawford247. Read him at 247sports.com. Great work every single day out of him. Brad, thank you for the time. Always great.
Thanks a lot, fellas.
All right, take care. Brad Crawford with us on the JohnstonRVCenter.com hotline.